Welcome to Innovation Hub. I'm Kara Miller. If you've passed through a pharmacy recently, you've seen them staring at you in thousands of squat little bottles, promising that they can make you leaner, less wrinkled, more energetic at work. And heck, now you can even get them in gummy fruit-flavored packages. But Catherine Price says you might want to hold off a second before shoveling a pile of vitamins into your cart. She's the author of Vitamania, Our Obsessive Quest for Nutritional Perfection. Catherine, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
So let me just start with this. When did our love of vitamins start?
Well, first I should just clarify what I mean by vitamins, because I at least was very confused by this. It's about the 13 chemicals known as human vitamins, which is the letters. So it's like A, C, D, E, K, and then the 8 B vitamins.
Okay.
Before I started writing the book, I, along with a lot of other people, tended to misuse that word to refer to all dietary supplements. And that's a category of about 85,000 products in America. So just to clarify from the beginning,
okay,
they're often put together both in our minds and then in terms of regulation. But yeah, our obsession with vitamins began basically last century when the vitamins were discovered. The word was only coined in 1911. And so our obsession with them started with the creation of the word and then really caught on once the concept spread to the public in the 20s and the 30s. And it's continued nonstop since then.
And what was the initial reaction like in the 20s and 30s when vitamins were discovered? Did people immediately get excited and say, I want to take these, or did it take quite a while for them to catch on?
What happened was that nutritional biochemists were the people who were responsible for originally discovering and recognizing these things. And then several of these biochemists started writing for a popular audience in addition to their scientific audiences and began to spread the idea of vitamins to the public. And once that began to become public, food marketers began to pick up on these substances, which, if you think about it, are fantastic marketing tools, because they're tasteless, they're invisible. And at that point, there was no way to measure how much of a particular vitamin a food contained, and no one really knew how much of these things we needed. But nutritional biochemists had discovered that without them, you develop really serious diseases and sometimes die. So it became a great tool for marketers to play up vitamins. And that really sparked the public's obsession.
Well, you write about something called, and this sounds great to me, vitamin donuts. I mean, if they sold those, I would buy them.
You know, they still do sell those. You could buy them.
Well, then I should be looking for them, obviously.
Yes. I mean, yeah, I actually printed out a poster of that that product, and I have it hanging in my kitchen. It shows two angelic little kids staring longingly at the words vitamin donuts. and they're actually enriched with thiamine, because that was a very popular vitamin at that time. That's vitamin B1. But yes, the vitamin donut was one of my favorite details that I uncovered.
You know, when you look at what the newest research shows us about vitamins, what does it say about how much we need of them? Should we be taking supplements?
The easy answer to your question is we don't have all the answers yet about these things. What I did discover is that, you know, there is definitely a danger to taking excess amounts of these things, particularly fat-soluble vitamins like vitamin A. Vitamin D can be problematic. But, you know, I think most of all what I took away from this is that there's just a surprising amount of things that are not known yet. So we don't fully understand what the vitamins do in our bodies, and we don't fully understand how much of each we need. And adding to the complexity of the task of figuring that out is that each of us are individual. And so individuals can have different nutritional requirements, both in terms of vitamins and other nutrients. So the big takeaway was that it's really not a good idea to try to micromanage our diets to come up with some perfect equation for health. And with that said, there are circumstances where people do need to take vitamins as supplements in addition to what they're eating in their diets. People who are thinking of becoming pregnant, for example, women of childbearing age should make sure they're getting enough folic acid, because that's a very important micronutrient in preventing a type of birth defect called neural tube defects. That occurs when the neural tube of a fetus doesn't properly close, and that's what becomes the baby's spine and nervous system. So it's very important to have enough of folic acid before you even know you're pregnant, because the tube can close before you're even aware of that.
Now, people swear by very often remedies that are vitamin-based. So I think about vitamin C to ward off a cold, and people believe very strongly in that. Evidence, is there evidence that that's true?
Vitamin C has not been shown to ward off colds, so that is mostly not true. With that said, placebo effects can be very powerful. So if you truly believe that vitamin C is going to prevent you from being sick, then it actually might prevent you from being sick. But there's not substantial scientific evidence that shows that stuff like Airborne or all the vitamin C drops everyone starts pounding, you know, in the winter actually do anything to prevent colds.
And are there other vitamins that you would put in that category where people believe you should take, you know, massive supplements or whatever level of supplement, but there's just not a lot of evidence that people should be taking these things?
Well, I think most of the things we take vitamins for don't have much evidence behind them. There's a couple good sources to look into that, like NIH has good information on vitamins and what has actually been proven. Or there's a site called consumerlab.com. That one's a paid subscription, but it has really good summaries of what vitamins have and have not been shown to do. But what I recommend people do is keep in mind the deficiency diseases that each vitamin is important for. So vitamin C will prevent scurvy. That is unquestionable. You know, you need vitamin C in order to not get the disease of scurvy. You need vitamin D to not get rickets, which is soft bones.
Okay, but wait, hold on a minute. I don't know anybody who's ever gotten scurvy or rickets. So are we, should we be taking these supplements because we're potentially, you know, in danger of getting scurvy or rickets?
No, you should not be taking supplements as a first-line defense against any of these deficiency diseases, as they're called. You don't need very much of each of the vitamin to prevent these deficiency diseases. So what you should be doing is eating a diet that contains a wide variety of foods that naturally contain vitamins, and then you likely will not have to worry about scurvy. With that said, though, I have been truly shocked to discover that actually scurvy does exist in America, and rickets does exist. You think of these diseases as being relegated to the past, but an acquaintance of mine actually recently did a radio story about some people in Massachusetts. There were some patients, mentally ill patients, who had very strange physical symptoms, including, you know, spongy gums and bruises on their body. No one could figure out what was going on, because the doctors never thought to ask them about what they ate. And when they finally asked them details about what they ate, there was one guy who'd spent a year eating nothing but ice cream, and there was another guy who'd eaten nothing but American cheese and white bread, and they both had scurvy. And when these researchers began to test more people in this population, they found that it was nowhere near as uncommon as you would think. So I like to bring that up just to say that most people, thankfully, do not have deficiency diseases. There's no reason to have them in the United States. But with that said, it is possible, even in this day and age, to eat such a poor diet that you actually do develop these diseases.
Now, you said have a balanced diet, which is going to lead to a reasonable intake of vitamins. Yes, but almost everyone has times when they don't eat well, or maybe they have trouble getting access to fresh fruits and vegetables, or they have trouble paying for those things. And so, you know, they're not going to use kale to cover their bases. So is there anything wrong with a gummy vitamin every day if there's nutrition that you do miss out on?
I mean, if you are actually missing out on vitamins, then yes, taking a multivitamin will help you meet those needs. There isn't convincing evidence that taking a multivitamin will do much beyond preventing deficiency diseases. So I don't think there's a reason to take one if you think you're getting vitamins elsewhere in your diet. At the same time, I don't think there's evidence showing that it's very harmful to take a multivitamin. So if you're one of the millions of Americans who feel compelled to eat a gummy vitamin, don't berate yourself for it. But I would question what your motivation is. And if you're worried about getting adequate nutrients, I really would say look at your diet. And one of the really interesting things I found in this is that in America, when you talk about people eating quote-unquote bad diets, you know, whatever that means, but let's say it means a lot of processed and refined foods.
Right.
A lot of those foods actually have vitamins added to them. So getting back to our donut example, while there are not too many products being marketed explicitly as vitamin donuts these days, most donuts and cakes and cookies and all these things are made with enriched flour. And that means flour that has had B vitamins and iron and often other nutrients added to it. And this basically helps us all cover our bases. I read a very interesting study that was pointing out that actually a surprising percentage of the vitamins in the American diet come from synthetic sources, which is to say that we're meeting our vitamin needs with the help of man-made vitamins that are being added to foods, not by eating foods that naturally contain vitamins. But I think what we should keep in mind is that a vitamin donut, a vitamin cookie, any of those things will not have all of the other things, the other dietary chemicals that are naturally contained in, say, kale. So that's always like the poster child right now for healthy kale. But I hear now it's going to be collards. So we'll just say
we're
collards.
Moving on.
Right?
Yeah, we're moving on. Yeah, okay.
Exactly. But, you know, there's a lot of other stuff in collards or broccoli or grapefruit or whatever that are not in a multivitamin or that are not in an enriched product. And we don't really fully understand the benefits of those other compounds. So I like to try to hedge my bets and go for the naturally nutrient-dense stuff. But if you're just worried about scurvy, you're probably fine eating, you know, just make sure you get a little bit of orange juice once in a while.
From what you're saying, it almost sounds like we've conflated what vitamins can do to help us when we're sick, like if we're really deficient in vitamin C, let's say, with what they can do for us when we're well. Like if they can make us not sick, then maybe eating triple doses of them, wouldn't that just be better?
See, that's a very important point, and it's definitely true, because vitamins really are miraculous in the case of true deficiency. If you have scurvy and you take vitamin C, you will be cured. You know, it's like an incredibly powerful drug in that case. If you suffer from nutritional blindness, which is a deficiency in vitamin A, you can actually have your sight restored within days just by squirting some vitamin A into your
wow.
mouth. I mean, it's truly amazing. That does not mean, however, that if you take huge doses of vitamin A, that you're going to be, you know, able to see in the dark or that you're going to never get cancer or something like that. In fact, vitamin A is dangerous in high doses. And likewise with vitamin C, a lot of people will say, oh, I'll take a really high dose of vitamin C because it's water soluble and it'll just wash out in my urine. But my thought there is we don't really know what happens if you saturate your tissues with vitamins, all the vitamin C they can hold. And so I just don't see any benefit to taking these super doses. And I think there are circumstances where it's been proven to be harmful.
One aspect of our love for vitamins seems to be that there are now whole aisles or whole sections in modern supermarkets that have just been turned over to them. When did the modern hype start around the power of vitamins?
Well, again, here it's interesting because when you talk about whole aisles being turned over to vitamins, what we're really talking about is dietary supplements. And I realized recently, you know, where part of that confusion stems from. If I go to my local Rite Aid and I look at the aisle where all these products are, it doesn't say dietary supplements. It actually says vitamins on the label for the aisle, which is very interesting to me. So basically, our interest in vitamins began as soon as the public became aware that such a thing existed. In terms of dietary supplements, those really began to pick up steam in the 70s, 80s, and particularly 90s, because there was a very influential law passed in the United States called the Dietary Supplement Health and Education Act. This was basically written by the supplement industry. You know, they engaged in a massive, massive campaign to get the public to support them on this with lots of letter writing and frankly, misinformation. And the result is that there's no requirement to test any dietary supplement for safety or for efficacy before you sell it. And it basically lumped every sort of dietary supplement, whether it be an amino acid or a botanical or an herb or a bodybuilding powder or a sexual enhancement supplement, all of those go in the same category, regulatory, you know, in terms of regulation, as vitamin C.
When you've talked about your research on vitamins to friends, to family, how willing have they been to reevaluate their own taking of vitamins? Because people can be really married to the way that they do things or, you know, what their doctor told them.
Yeah, they're not really receptive. It's an interesting subject because people will say, oh, you're writing a book about vitamins and ask me what seems like a question. And then in reality, they just want to tell me about what they're taking. So, and it often, you know, getting back to that dietary supplement versus vitamin thing has nothing to do with vitamins. It's about chondroitin or, you know, royal jelly or like sea buckthorn or something where I'm like, okay, well, good for you. I don't have much to say about that. And you're also clearly like so devoted to this cause that it doesn't really matter what I say, but thank you for striking up a conversation.
Catherine Price is the author of Vitamania, Our Obsessive Quest for Nutritional Perfection. She's written about health, food, and science for the New York Times, Popular Science, and the LA Times, among others. Catherine, thank you.
Thank you very much for having me.
Check out our podcast in iTunes, or you can find it on the SoundCloud app. From PRI and WGBH Radio, I'm Kara Miller, and this is Innovation Hub.